Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
Good world, it's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey, episode 68 of the Respect the Game podcast. It's late summer, so you know the summer ball has just street ball in New York is pretty much winding down, wrapping up. So, you know, we thought it'd be a good idea to bring on a very special guest. Jeez, I can't talk today. And that's Adrian Walton, Harlem's own. Adrian, thank you for joining the show. Welcome, man.
Not a problem. Your boy is in the building. Harlem is here. Streets First is here.
Can we get an AKA or nah? I know you got plenty.
You already know. You know, AKA A Butter, AKA Butter Butter, AKA Whole Lot of Game, AKA 357, AKA I Give Your Favorite NBA Player Buckets.
So this is, I guess, a little serendipitous because, you know, you were just featured heavily in the Ball's Life video that they did about New York City.
Very huge, very huge.
Angel, who is sitting to the left of me, emailed me last week. So, you know, it kind of just fell together like that. But for those who haven't seen it, Ball's Life came to New York. They interviewed Adrian, God Sham God, Dennis Page, who is the founder and publisher of Slam. About
shout
street ball.
Them.
Yeah, of course.
Fat
about
Joe. Shout out to my man, Fat Joe. Yeah. Terror Era.
So, you know, how'd you get linked up with Ball's Life? How did you get involved in that whole process?
My man, shout out to Kane and Jasper. Kane and Jasper reached out to me. You know, he hollered at me and asked me, you know, yo, hey, they're getting ready to do a lot of different, they're getting ready to do a different documentary on New York. And they wanted to really, like, shed some light on the people that they really felt like played a part in the history of when a time New York City was on a different type of level. Mm-hmm. And that was like the late 90s, early 2000s. So when he reached out to me, you know, I spoke to him, the director too of the documentary, Mike Nichols, if I'm not mistaken. He hollered at me and we spoke and everything. And I just told him, you know, I'm doing a basketball podcast, and I would love to, you know, speak highly on what I grew up in, you know, especially seeing in New York, you know, coming up in the era that I came up in and being around the people that I've been around. You know, those guys, they wanted me to really, really talk about the history and the mecca of being in New York. So, you know, me having legendary years in New York, a long stretch, you know, from 17 to about 33, 32 years old, you know, playing out in street ball, and I just wanted to make sure that I let them know that, you know, it's time for them to let that footage go from back then. You know, ESPN, NBA TV, ESPN2, MSG, they have all the rights to all of that footage. You know what I mean? So I can't wait till that stuff come out. But I couldn't wait to speak to those guys about being in that documentary. It's very huge.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, I grew up in the suburbs, Westchester County, north of New York, and you know, I would always watch those games on ESPN2 and MSG, and like the Rucker just seemed like another world to me. Like, it just seemed almost, you know, to me it was like bigger than the NBA. To, you know, to see guys like, you know, like a Kobe Bryant in the flesh.
That's
that
right.
Close, like a Vince Carter in the flesh. So for you to play in that and you know, pretty much dominate in those games, like, what was that experience for you, you know, going up against guys like Vince Carter and Steph Marbury and seeing Fat Joe on the sideline, seeing the Diddy on the sideline? Like, what are some of your favorite memories from the park back then?
Some of my favorite memories is I went into a double, triple overtime game against Stephon Marbury. He was on Fat Joe's team at the time. I was playing for Tony Rosa. And I just remember Steph fouling out going in the first overtime. And
wait, the refs let him foul out in
yes,
the street?
You know, it was tough for Steph to guard me at that time. You know, I was a young phenom at that time. So whatever NBA players I played up against, shout out to Jason Terry, Jamal Tinsley, Ron Artest, a few others I can name, Rafer Alston, you know what I mean? Those guys, Mark Jackson, a lot of those guys, Smush Park, a lot of those guys was out there playing at that time. So basically, I was young and I was hungry, you know, and I always felt like, you know, if people watching those guys and I was able to show the people that was watching them that I had talent too, you know, that I wouldn't be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't understand back then why they called me Hollywood, and it's because I carried myself a certain way, because back then Rucker was our NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, Rucker was like the best tournament of the world at the time. So me hearing that and then seeing people like Steph and Jay-Z and the players that Fat Joe was bringing, like, he had to bribe me. He had to get me to stop playing against the team that I was playing against, playing him against. Yeah. And he brought me on his team. And when he brought me on his team, it was like, you know, I remember him bringing Jermaine O'Neal,
right.
Zach Randolph, Katino Mobley, Sean Marion, Al Harrington. This was all in one game he brought. And this was against Murder, Inc., if I'm not mistaken. They had Baron Davis. You know, shout out to Chris Gotti, Irv Gotti, and those guys. But that whole atmosphere back then, you know, LeBron being number one at the time in the NBA, and I mean, not in the NBA, in high school.
Right.
And, you know, Jay-Z was bringing them to the games and stuff, Lamar Odom. Just seeing and being in that atmosphere, it made you feel like you were Hollywood and you had to step up and be ready to play.
Mm.
And I just felt like, you know, at that time, me being a part of that, I would be remembered forever. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I just ran with, you know, being me and being strong. I wanted to say something about Westchester. You know, you said you was from Westchester. You heard of Westchester Wildfire?
Nah.
Well, anyway, that was an ABA team
okay.
that John Starks owned
you know
up
what?
There.
And I used to, Westchester County, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
and I used to play
County
for
Center.
Them. You know, I just wanted to throw that out there to you. I used to play for them. Shout out to John Starks of the Westchester County. You know what I mean? I played for them. ABA, Westchester Wildfire. Mother never forgets.
You know, but you know, your game didn't, you know, it didn't end at the park. Like you went to Fordham, you played professionally in different leagues. So, you know, how different was it? Like, you know, you talk about playing at the Rucker and that being like the best tournament in the world and seeing all these celebrities there and, you know, being the man at that park. Like, what was that transition like going from that to playing at like a Fordham where things are a little more, I guess, sterile, a little more organized? Like, how big of like, was it like a culture shock? Like, what was the big difference there?
Structure.
Yeah.
You know, shout out, and I love to give shout out to Gaucho, shout out to Riverside, because growing up playing in New York for those AAU teams, I was able to learn a little bit of structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like prepared for it. You know, I had to pass my RCTs. I had to pass my regents in order for me to go. You know, everybody knew I was a big time street ball player at the time. So all the newspapers, you know, they was doing big articles on me about making sure that I passed my SAT in order for me to go on to the next level. The shock was the coaches. You know, I always wanted to make sure that I passed this message on to the next generation. Once you sign, they own you. I don't care what they selling you before you get there. That's for them to help their program and to make sure that their college generate money. Now that I'm older, I want to pass that message on to a kid. You know, it was difficult for me to play for, you know, Bob Hill, because he was still like an NBA coach and I was a kid coming into college. So
right.
They treated us, you know, like, different, you know what I mean? Different from what I was coming from AAU and stuff. And even though the structure and everything was something that I was able to transition to because it wasn't that hard, like I said, for playing for AAU teams, the hardest part for me and why things really didn't work out was because he was like a, sorry to say it, ball buster.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was like, you make me think that I'm coming to a school to, you know, start and to play, knowing that I could have went to a higher D1 school, but I chose to come to this school because of the things that you were selling me in the beginning. And then when I get there, you change everything. And that was a culture shock for me, coming from where I was coming from, plus doing the things that I was doing. It was like, why is this guy doing this to me? And it's a low D1 school. Like, I'm doing y'all a favor coming here. I was supposed to go to the University of Miami. But I chose to stay in New York because I had a daughter and I wanted to be close to my child.
Right.
But going to play for him, it was like, like I said, that was the culture shock for me. He was a ball buster, you know, and not only that, it's like the very first time that he started me, Fordham has never beat UMass before. Mm. I scored 25 points and Fordham beats UMass the very first time I start. And right before you go into the room to talk about the game and they're giving you the interview, right before I walk through the door, this is the coach. Don't let none of that get to your head. You might not start next game.
Right.
And I'm just saying, as a kid, I'm wondering why my coach is making me feel like this. So that's just like kind of the message that I always wanted to be able to pass on to the next generation.
Right.
Don't fall yourself short for what they're selling you from before. You know what I mean? You got to really make sure that at the end of the day, what it is that they're selling you, you know, it's worth you realizing that after that 1 year, the next 3 years of your eligibility could be taken away from you like it was from me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah. Just wanted to throw that out.
No, there. Of course. And then, I mean, when you're a 17, 18-year-old kid, you know, you got a coach from Fordham or from a Miami or whatever school, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. And they're selling you the world. And
that's right.
Like you said, like, doesn't always work out like that. So being in the position you're in now, you know, with the Streets for First podcast, like, are you using this more as, I mean, obviously it's entertainment first and foremost, but as like instructional, but like kind of like a way to help kids or steer kids.
I want to make sure
to make the right decisions and to do, you know,
right.
to learn from where you
try
may have went wrong.
Try to make sure like the next generation don't make some of the mistakes that we made, mm-hmm. you know, and I try to bring rappers, athletes, people that I'm in contact with and make sure that I'm able to sit down and have a conversation with them and, you know, allow myself to ask them questions and talk about their history and things and how did they make choices so that a kid could be able to choose hearing my history and hearing the choices that I made versus some of the people that I'm bringing on that has kept moving on, that got over the hump that I couldn't get over at the time.
Right.
So I think that that's more valuable for a kid to say that he at least heard it and now he has a choice. As long as you give a kid a choice, you know, they'll be able to choose the right thing, but you got to be able to give them a choice to where they can see options. You can't just give them a choice and then they have no other choice but to choose that. You got to make sure that they got options so that they can feel comfortable about the choices that they made even after the fact. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that that's more value for a kid through the podcast and the platform that I have. I'm just trying to make sure that a lot of the kids today, they don't know who Mario Elliott is.
Right.
A lot of the kids today, they don't remember Glenn Rice. Like, they could care less sometimes about learning about their history. So I'm just shining a light and reflecting on people that I know did something back then and is still kind of like doing something today mm-hmm. because I feel that if I am going to direct a kid to go and listen to an interview or to go and make sure that they can hear who was before them, at least that person could be talking about what they're still doing today that could help a kid. You know, I want a kid to be able to say that just because I didn't make it in basketball didn't mean that I didn't hear other things that could help me keep my spirits up, my hopes up, and be able to try something else, knowing that everybody don't make it in basketball. Mm-hmm. So I try to incorporate all of that within the podcast. And just like I said, making sure that the legends never die. I feel like legends and people that have accomplished things that kids are walking right next to in the street or seeing when they come to these tournaments, they wouldn't even have the slightest idea that this guy played on NBA teams. They wouldn't have the slightest idea that this guy been through a lot of different things in life, the same walk that they're walking. So, like I said, once again, I just feel a lot of that is more valuable for a kid to be able to pick up on. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's life after basketball.
There you know? You go. Love that hashtag.
And, you know, some of the guests you've had on most recently is Anthony Morrow, God Sham God, who's coaching with the Mavericks, Cameron, you know, don't even need to say anything about him. Rod Strickland, who's coaching on the college level. Kareem Reed, streetball legend. Chibs, who's, you know,
Kenny Anderson,
turned his
baby.
Life around completely. Yeah, you know, we've had him up here a few times. We love talking to Kenny. Felipe Lopez, you know, was the Jordan, you know, that's supposed to be the next Jordan. You know, he's doing great things in the community. So, you know, you have these guys from all walks of life. Some
we got Ben Gordon coming
Ben
up.
Gordon.
We got Lenny Cook coming up. You know what I mean? We got some more heavy hitters coming up.
Yeah, and all guys that, you know, were huge at one point
mm-hmm.
and either, you know, maintain that success or derailed, but you know, it's important to hear stories on both sides, as you, as you've said. But, you know, I'd imagine being that most of these guys are from New York and local guys, that, you know, you probably have a personal
relationship. Not everybody. Yeah. Anthony Morrow's from Charlotte.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the next thing I just wanted to let you know, that there's a legend in every city.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I'm just starting with New York because I'm from New York.
Well,
and not only that, I also grew up knowing that New York has been the mecca of basketball. So why not start where you grew up at and where you feel like the most noticeable basketball has been? You know what I mean? I understand that times have changed now. A lot of people outside of New York don't respect New York like that anymore. But shout out to Jelly Fam. That's waking everybody back up in the world to let them know that New York still has some top talent around here.
For sure.
You know what I mean? So it's just a movement, you know, just try to keep moving New York and just trying to keep making sure that we could do things for not just this city, but every city. Because like I said, you know, I'm looking at myself like a rapper. You know, I grew up with rappers. I grew up with basketball players. And I know rappers want to be ball players. I know ball players want to be rappers. So
we started Slam, man.
You know, the way that I see stuff is like, I'm basically going to be doing tours. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go from city to city and interview players that I know is legends in their city. You know, I'm cool with Baron Davis, so I already know what's up with the Drew League. I know Jamal Crawford, so I already know what's going on in Seattle. Mm-hmm. There's certain people that I know in Houston, you know what I mean, to find out what's going on in Houston, Chicago, Philly. To me, it's just a matter of making sure that all the legends realize that they are somebody, but not to let their city forget who they are. And I know that people are not making sure that, you know, sorry to say it, but mainstream, you know, with ESPN and certain people keep on TV, I want to make sure that we know that there are other people outside that didn't make it or did make it but wasn't the top. They all have stories, too. We all got a story. Yeah, you know what I mean?
For sure. And, you know, you think of guys like, you know, like a Shea Cotton out in
ooh,
Cali.
See what I'm saying?
Who we've interviewed and out on this show before. So, like, I don't mean to keep harping on this, but it's like, you know, just because you're out of the spotlight doesn't mean your life is over.
Talk to him. You know, talk to him.
You could still be a success. You could still do things with your life, either, you know, self-made, helping others, you know, inspiring others. Like, there's so much more to basketball, and I think that gets lost in the sauce a little bit, especially with the, like, the way social media is and the way ESPN covers this thing. It's like, if you don't make it to the NBA as a top recruit, like, all right, your life is over. But it's not like that. There's so much more to life than that.
And I feel it's up to people like me, people like you, mm-hmm. with these platforms right here to make sure that we speak about that. Because to me, if you're really watching the world today, a lot of things is about awareness. And if you could bring the right type of awareness to the right, to, how do you say, the right audience, mm-hmm. a lot of people will pick up on that, because we're in a world where everybody has their phones and technology, so everybody's yearning for learning. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to make sure that whatever it is that I'm a part of, that I'm giving back something positive to the people that's yearning and learning. Because I remember back then, when I was younger, me growing up with rappers and being around the people that I was around at the time, I grasped a lot of the negative. And it wasn't their fault. It was just me being a product of my environment.
Yeah.
And now that I'm a little bit older and I've been through a lot of things that I've been through, God has made me see a lot of different things differently. You know, he made me feel that not to hold my past against the people that I thought might have hurt me or might have made not try to help me be as successful as I could be.
Mm.
And by him helping me learn to love people beyond the limits of my prejudices, that helped change me to where I'm now, able to see that everybody that I've encountered with, that they're all going to come back.
Mm.
But I got to have a better attitude. I got to be a better person in order to know how to deal with them. And sometimes coming from the environment that I come from, it's hard for me to not feel like you didn't help me or you didn't try to help me, but you were selling that when you were younger, when I was younger. So it's like when you got something good going, everybody is a friend of yours. Everybody's trying to be around. But when things slow down, you really get to see how people feel for you, and you really get to see what people was really there for you. And I had a transition period in my life from 32 to 34 to really see what people were there for me. I'm still going through a little bit of a transition period from 34 to now being 36 to being able to see what people is really still in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all make mistakes. You know what I'm saying? And the bad part that I deal with today is people hold it against you. And I know that that's not what we all here for. We all here to help each other, whichever way it may be. You know what I mean? And the only way that you hurt other people is when you're hurt. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to just let my pain go, but let my pain go in a different way to where I'm speaking in a positive way to try to help someone else. Right. You know what I mean? And I'm proud of myself for doing that. You know what I mean? I don't need nobody around no more to pat me on my back for the good things that I know that I'm doing, because now I know that before, when I was playing basketball, I was doing it for the people. Mm-hmm. I know that my teammates and a lot of other people was mad at me for the things that I was doing, how I was moving, but they didn't realize that I was seeing things different for the long run. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm here in the long run, it's stuff like this. The reason why I'm doing this is because I stood for something. You know, I didn't let the public's desire and the public's opinion change who I am. You know what I mean? And I just feel like that helped me get to this point. You know what I'm saying? The fact that I was so strong and being a certain way about who I am and who I want the people to see, that's something now that I want to give back. Meaning, just a little joke, everybody used to say, like, yo, you think you all that and you think you the man and you everything shouldn't just be about you. But I've learned now to make sure that it's you now. Mm-hmm. I want to show now that the same way people used to think that I was bragging about myself and I made myself, look at what I could do for you now. And I feel that that's helping me grow. That's part of my growth, to show that maybe you had a different perception of me before.
Right.
But I'm not the same person anymore. And I just want to be a reflection that God do still exist. You know, coming from the community that I come from, I want to be able to show people that you could go and give God a chance so that God can show you what he has for you. Because at the time when I was young and growing up and the people that I was around a lot of bosses. Mm-hmm. I was around a lot of bosses. And now that I'm a little older, I only hang around leaders. And when I say, well, how can you tell the difference between a boss and a leader? A boss gonna tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. A boss gonna judge you if it doesn't get done. A leader might tell you what to do, but if it don't get done, the leader's going to show you how to get it done.
Right.
And I think that that's a big thing when you coming from the inner cities. We lack leaders. Mm. We have a lot of bosses. We got a lot of people out here that feel like they're doing it, or they the man, or whatever the case may be, whatever profession they're in. But I'm more into trying to pass back to the next generation idea that there are a lot of leaders around here in the world. And right now, if you could see some of the names that you just named that have been on my podcast, even if you look on yours, leaders. Mm-hmm. People that are trying to help, people that have been helping, people are trying to give back, people that are trying to show that, you know, they care, versus the boss. If I can't get nothing from this, or I can't get nothing out of this, I might not be a part of it.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important just in this time of, like, political strife and all the crazy shit going on in the world, you know, it's important to have that attitude and you know, look at people and want to help them and not turn your back on them. But someone I want to ask you about kind of in that same vein is Greg Marius.
Oh, man, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, who I'm sure you had a relationship with. So,
like my uncle.
Yeah, so why don't you, you know, for those that don't know, he was the founder of the Entertainers Basketball Classic, which you played in.
EBC, Rucker Park, yeah. Formerly known now as Greg Marius Courts.
So just did so much for the community, you know, revived the street ball culture in New York, and really was just a legend and is a legend. So, you know, why don't you just talk about your relationship with him and you know, and then what kind of impact he had on your life.
Once again, another great person that you asked me about. Rest in peace, Greg. You know, I want the world to know once again that this is the type of person that I'm talking about, a leader. You know, I respect Greg. I respected that everything that Greg was about. Me growing up in Harlem, one block away from him, Greg showed me a lot about what your presence should be in your community. In other words, everybody not going to love or support what you do. But as long as you keep making sure that you understand what you're doing it for, you will always be remembered. Mm. So me hearing those things from him and being around him and watching, you know, his actions, his movements, that opened my eyes to be able to see that I could be just like that. I wanna be an icon in my community. I wanna make sure that I do something that'll last forever. And that's what Greg left. You know, Greg touched so many people and done so many things for the community, but not just for the community. I'm talking about for the world. When I say the world, I mean Greg inspired people to know that if you didn't make it to the NBA, there always was a home for you in the street. So I kind of like name my podcast kind of like behind stuff, seeing stuff like that. You know, no matter where you go in the world, no matter where you come from, you got to go through the streets first. So I just felt like, you know, he was really showing me, you know, how you supposed to maneuver and what people you supposed to talk to and brush shoulders with and how you supposed to react and respond to realize where your power lies. Those are things that were valuable to me that I took from Greg, you know what I mean? And just to see how the mayor came out, you know, and gave him his own day and named the park after him, that let me know that he was very inspirational, not just to me, not just to the community, but to the city. And, you know, for them to recognize that, that's huge, you know? Like, to me, that just inspires me even more to want to, like I said to people, if you watch the documentary about Baller's life, New York is a competitive city, and that's what I'm competing with. You know, I watch Cameron, Mace, Diddy, Dave East. I watch all of these guys come up from Harlem in New York City. Jim Jones, all of these guys. And I just sit back and I say to myself, what is it that I could do to make sure that New York never forgets me? And I just feel like right now what I'm doing is just giving everybody a platform to where they can never be forgotten.
Right.
You know, and it's up to you how you want to, you know, spread that message. And that's why I was so happy that Greg, you know, sorry to say that I was the last person that he did an interview with, but I was just happy that he was the first person that I interviewed. Right. You know what I mean? That I wanted him to know how much he inspired me and that he made me see some things about myself growing up, even as a kid, you know, to try to just find someone to listen to, you know, and he knew that it was hard for me to listen and respect a lot of people in the community because I lost my pops at a young age. So once my father died, it was like no one really could tell me nothing. Mm-hmm. And Greg was one of those that, you know, had a special heart, you know, to know how to get to me and, you know, make me understand that I need to, like, listen to him, you know what I mean? And he directed me, you know, which church he goes to and, you know, the things that he's about. And, you know, I just tried to follow that stuff. And now that he's not here, you know, I wish that he could see some of the things that I'm doing. And I know that he's looking down, but I'm just going to try to continue to keep letting the world know what type of man he was. Him, you know, rest in peace to Ali Mo, rest in peace to Big Strick, you know, rest in peace to my friend that I just went to a funeral today for, Chef. He was big in the community, played for the Mustangs. Rest in peace even to Fat Mac. You know, these guys were basketball pillars in our community. And right now, Harlem is kind of like dealing with these different deaths just this year. Mm-hmm. And like I said, no matter where I go, what I do, I'm going to always try to make sure that I let those people know that as much as I know that they were doing to be remembered, they will always have a fan of me to make sure that people never forget them.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's cool that, you know, Cordell, his nephew, took over the park.
Shout out to Cordell Marius.
And, you know, people, the community isn't letting the park die. Like, people are still going out. And, you know, I think it speaks not only to Greg, but to the community in Harlem, you know, that, you know, they see someone pass away, so they turn their back, they're there to help Cordell when they can, and I think it's, you know, it's important to...
They could do it a little bit more, too, not to cut you off, but I wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of the rappers, a lot of the people that were out there before, a lot of the sponsors, a lot of the, you know, rap groups, you know what I mean? A lot of the entertainment groups. We need y'all to come back. You know, a lot of the things in the city used to go a certain way because, you know, hip-hop is like a religion in the inner cities. Mm-hmm. So we need that unity. We need you guys to come back out and, you know, to make sure you let everyone know that you play a part and what that park once represented and still can represent today, knowing that the commissioner is not there. You know what I mean? Sometimes one door closes for another one to open, and it all depends on who's in position to open that door to know how to treat everyone that starts to come in. You know what I mean? And I think that that's where Cordell is trying to take the park now. You know, he's new at this. He really doesn't know a lot of the commissioners and people out there, but me being a person that's been out here for 17, 18, 19 years, I try to connect him with the right people to let him know that you can't have certain people around you right now that Greg kept arm distance. Mm-hmm. And I would understand that because I was around Greg. He really wasn't. He understood what the park was about. He understands what his uncle was doing, but he really wasn't there. So I just try to make sure that he understands what people to keep arm's distance and what people to brush shoulders with, because that's valuable on what Greg did to keep elevating for 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in our city, people could get caught up with letting the wrong people get in your ear because now it's their turn, or they felt like they haven't gotten their turn for so long that, you know, you really don't know too much. So how do you say it? I'll leave it at this. You can't gaffle a gaffler.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah, we really got to start to look at what people is out here gaffling and trying to get over and trying to use spaces and platforms to make sure that people know them, because that's the kind of world that we're in right now. A lot of people want to be get this attention. And it's like, to me, what work or what caliber of work or what caliber of people are talking about you, the reason why you feel you should be in that position, or do you feel you should be in that position because you're good at talking about yourself? Mm. That's the thing when it goes back to like my podcast. If you hear like the beginning of the show, if the people not talking about you, I'm not going to interview you.
Right.
Because to me, I can't speak to you knowing that you're using a platform to just promote and big yourself up. Like, you can go do that on your own Instagram or your own Facebook. This right here is a message. And I just feel like for the future going forward, that's what I watch Greg do. I always watch Greg do stuff with his actions that always sent a message. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to follow. Who am I to, excuse my language, fuck tradition up?
So you mentioned Jelly Fam earlier, and, you know, I think in the last probably two or three summers, you know, we've seen those kids just really take over the park scene. So, you know, is it reminiscent of the days you were out there?
I'm going to keep it 100 with you, man. I'm going to just tell you what my friends and people tell me. It was called the Butter Roll first. That's why my name is A Butter. But, like I said, it's a movement now. And, you know, shout out to them, Jelly Fam. Like, it's huge to watch, you know, a kid that I watched grow up, and I'm talking about Jaquay James. Mm-hmm. Jaquay James is Juel's nephew, and right. I grew up with Dipset, you know what I mean? So I watched Ja when he was a baby. And just to see where he's at today, you know, and watching what his brother's doing and helping him and helping his uncle. And then I'm looking at Isaiah, you know. A lot of people didn't really follow Isaiah like that when he was back, but hard work and the things that these kids are doing to stay in the gym and to make sure that they get better and better and better and attack each and each and every challenge and to put on together, that excites me more than anything, because I remember growing up in an era, and, you know, no offense, but I was around the Ali Mo, rest in peace, the Sham Gods, the Kareem Reeds. And if you listen in the interview, it wasn't no togetherness. It was, you know, I know he's nice, but I need the people in the city to know I'm nice. So we didn't know how to come together because we were so competitive. These kids know that they're competitive, but they still have a unity together. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, I appreciate that. The fact that they are uniting, knowing that each and every one of them have their own identity. And I think that that is a special message to send to the next generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they got, I mean, speaking of that, they all seem like they got good heads on their shoulders, and they've made it a point to reach out to the next generation and show them that it's
early.
Yeah. So I think, and shout out to them. And I think it's what they're doing is really special, and it's a shame they can't get paid for it already.
I don't really want to put too much out, but just know that Cam'ron owns the rights to Jelly Fam. Mm. So at the end of the day, like I said, Harlem takes care of Harlem. Harlem sticks together, and, you know, Cam's very huge on lawsuits. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, I'm quite sure that he's a smart businessman. He understands how to manage things and do things, and he's been way ahead of his time for a long time that people didn't realize. And you know, I'm quite sure that he's going to make sure that, you know, those guys are okay and New York is okay and Harlem is okay. So I trust that Jelly Fam is in the right hands.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, Joel's brother just won the Dykeman Championship,
oh,
right?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Shout out to Skull Gang. You heard? Shout out to Twin winning Dykeman. Like, when I tell you, he brought, what's my man? From San Antonio, the Anderson kid.
Kyle Anderson.
Anderson. Like, shout out to him, man. The fact that, you know, these guys come out and they don't just play one game or two games. They really out there, and I like that. That means that they're playing against competition. Shout out to Kenny. Shout out to Dykeman. You know what I mean? Kenny is doing a good thing. Hey, yo, Kenny, you got the juice now. Hey, yo, Kenny, you heard that in the movie Juice? When Pac fell off the roof, yo, you got the juice now, you heard?
Yeah, we actually had Kyle up here a couple weeks ago.
Wow, that's huge.
And he was saying, like, he looked up to, you know, Kareem Reeds and guys like yourself when he was a kid. So that has inspired him to come back to the park and play. Because, like, he doesn't make a big deal out of it. Like, he's not, like, the kind of dude who gets on social media. He's like, I'm pulling up to the park, come out, blah, blah, blah. He, like you said, he goes and he actually plays. And I think, you know, guys like him are a special breed and want that attention and know how important it is to play in the park in New York.
And just let me be the first to let him know that the city appreciates it. Mm-hmm. You know, whether people say it to you, they feel it. It's in them. They just don't know how.
Right.
You know, sometimes I guys don't know how to tell me my sneakers is hot or I like your shades. Sometimes people don't know how to compliment you or appreciate what you're doing. And I just feel like in New York City, people don't really do that because now you're taking the attention off of you.
Yeah.
So it's like once we start getting to a point where, like I said, what the younger generation is doing right now, we all got to understand that kings are raised with kings. Mm-hmm. And we can't sit here and be treating everybody like we're just bosses. We got to learn how to be leaders together. We got to learn how to unite together. We got to learn how to come together and realize that we could do more together than against each other. Because at the end of the day, we all doing the same thing when you really think about it. And what I mean by the same thing is we all trying to get a certain type of love, a certain type of wealth to make sure that we're remembered. Mm. Who are you touching within doing all of that? And I think that that's more valuable and people will see that as years to come. You know what I mean?
So before we get out of here, you know, number one, where can we find the Streets First podcast? And number two, you know, what's on deck? Who's coming up next?
I got you. You can find the podcast, Streets First Podcast, on iTunes. You can find Streets First Podcast on SoundCloud. You can find Streets First Podcast on Audio Mac. You can follow us on Instagram at Streets First Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Streets First PC. And you can follow us on Facebook at Streets First Podcast. Basically, I got my man Royale Ivy coming up.
Nice. Queens.
I'm going to be talking to, you know, sorry world, but I have a little secret to let out. I will be talking to Tiana Taylor and Iman Shumpert. They are doing a beauty salon in Harlem. You know, I'm thinking about going in, interviewing them there, but, you know, Tiana's a very big fan of basketball. She has a lot of basketball teams in New York through the summer. Iman is huge with basketball. He just won a chip a year or two ago, so you know, they're like a basketball family on the low. Right. So, you know, we're in discussions with working that out. Who else I got? I got a list. So it's like, you know, I just spoke to Rafe Alston last night. Mm-hmm. We going to talk. You know, he's the GOAT of street ball. So, you know, I got to get him on there. Caesar from Black Ink. Me and him went to high school together. Nice. So I will be sitting down and talking to him. He's a big fan of basketball. I got a lot of celebrities coming up, man. Cool. I really don't want to put too many of them out there because I want people to be shocked and surprised. You know what I mean?
Well, Adrian, thanks for coming through, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Best of luck with everything. Streets First Podcast, if you need to hear it again, it's out there. Go peep that. And it was a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Shout out to Slam. You heard?
Peace.